Blog Talk Radio.
Alongside Jeremy Espy, and for the next 2 hours, we will be talking sports and having fun doing it. I want all your ideas, all your opinions, and all your beliefs. And, of course, you will get a heavy dose of our pain. If you have an opinion, a number to call, 646-727-3070. That's 646-727-3070. You can listen to the show at blogtalkradio.com/pgan. That's blogtalkradio.com/pgan. And you can send email messages to the show at goforit.gan@gmail.com. That's goforit.gan@gmail.com. Expected today to be joined by 140-pound champion, former 140-pound champion, WBO champion, Devin Alexander. Devin, he's going to talk to us about the fight and more. So it should be very interesting to get his take on how he felt about the fight. And also, we're going to talk about the Super Bowl today, of course. The big game tomorrow night in Dallas, Texas, in the big house that Jerry built. It's going to be Super Bowl 45. In an icy and cold Dallas, Texas, mind you. Super Bowl 45, Green Bay Packers against the Pittsburgh Steelers. Two storied franchises. Two franchises that are legendary, have a huge following throughout. They travel well. So this should be a good one. And this is going to be a Super Bowl that I think it's going to come down to the end. These are two tough football teams here. These are two gritty football teams. And these are two football teams that have shown the ability to refuse to lose. And so right now, it's going to be a very interesting Super Bowl. And a Super Bowl that I'm looking forward to be honest. Which, I mean, you look at these two ball clubs, 9 Super Bowl titles between the both of them. 9 titles between the both of them. I mean, so that's legendary. These are legendary franchises. And they're meeting in Super Bowl 45. And if you look at it right now, 2 quarterbacks who, one in Aaron Rodgers is playing off the charts in these playoffs, who has found a way, who's getting it done. He's getting it done in these playoffs. And they went through Philadelphia. They went through Atlanta, and they went through Chicago, 6th seed in the NFC. That didn't matter to them. That didn't matter that they had to go on the road to get to this place. That did not matter to this team. That didn't matter to this Green Bay Packers team. They refuse to lose. They refuse to lose, and they refuse to fall short in these playoffs. And if you look at this team right now, the Green Bay Packers I'm talking about, you look at the end of their season. The end of their season was essentially a playoff for them. It was the playoffs for them. The end of the season was their playoff. I mean, they had to essentially win the last few games to get to this position, to get even into the playoffs. I mean, they had to win. They were must-win situations. A must-win situation against the New York Giants, a must-win situation against the Chicago Bears. I mean, those were situations where they had to win. If they didn't, they would be home. They would have been home. So they had to beat the Giants, and they had to beat the Bears to even get into the playoffs. So they've been in playoff mode essentially since week 16. You have other teams who essentially knew by that time that they were pretty much in the playoffs. This Packer team didn't know. They didn't know. And the reality of it is, if they did not win those two games, guess what? They would be sitting at home watching tomorrow. They went to Philly. Got it done. They went to Atlanta. Got it done. They went to Chicago. Got it done. I've said this before. This team has destiny written all over it. This team is a team that I'm going to call Destiny's Child.
Oh, my God.
This team is Beyoncé. It's Kelly. It's Michelle. It's Destiny's Child. This team has a look of Destiny's Child.
You're not going to keep it quiet forever.
As we have someone wailing in the background, are you okay?
You're not going to keep me quiet forever. I mean, Green Bay Gant, you know, GBG. So let me understand this. You're now stepping off of the Steelers bandwagon, and you're jumping on the GBG, on the Gant wagon?
I'm not saying anything.
GBG, GBG.
This team has the look of Destiny's Child.
They were the sixth seed.
Oh, come on, man.
They found a way.
Let's look at some things real fast. I know we have a lot to do, a lot to cover, and I know we want to get through a lot. But let's look at one thing real fast. Let's keep it real. The Packers, like you just said, had to wait until the last week of the season to even get this opportunity. All things being considered, if you're a championship caliber team, that's not necessarily a good look. I mean, they played inconsistent football throughout the year. Right or wrong, buddy?
Yes, they've been inconsistent throughout the season, correct.
And certainly, Paul, now I'm going to tell you right now, I said it last week. I said the week before. I told you the Green Bay Packers were hitting the Super Bowl stride. In terms of their playoffs, they looked phenomenal isn't even the word. So I don't disagree with you. They right now have the look of a team that certainly, they're going to make some inroads. But like you said about the Jets, Paul, comparing apples to apples, you got to look at the breadth of a season. And it's important. They had moments where they struggled mightily against teams that they should have been whooping. So, to me, I want to question, I want to look at what's going to happen, where are they going to go, when are they going to be able to have that breakdown game again? Are they going to have another breakdown game?
Well, I think it's safe to say throughout these playoffs, in the last 2 weeks of the season included in this argument, the last 5 weeks, essentially, it's 5-6 weeks, this team has been playing focused football. This team has been playing championship caliber football. And the only way that you can go through Philly, only way that you can go through Atlanta, and the only way you can go through Chicago is by playing championship caliber football. Before these playoffs started, everyone was touting the Eagles, including myself, as the team to beat, not necessarily the team to beat, but the team that can definitely make a legitimate and serious run to the Super Bowl. Atlanta Falcons, number one seed. So that goes without saying, essentially the favorite. You're the number one seed. Everything comes through your building. Chicago Bears, a team that seemed like they hit their stride as well. Jay Cutler was playing well. The defense was playing well. And you thought, okay, yeah, maybe they could beat the Eagles, maybe the Packers. Yeah, maybe they could beat the Falcons, but I thought this thing would just stop in Chicago with the Chicago Bears. But it didn't. This team went on the road and just played some tough, grinded-out football. And this tough, grinded-out football got them to this point where we're at right now, and that is in the Super Bowl. I mean, who knew? I mean, not to toot my own horn, but to start the season, I actually had the Green Bay Packers in the Super Bowl, and actually I believe had them win the Super Bowl. I had them playing the Bengals, so I was a little wrong there. But, you know, hey, everybody's wrong sometimes. I mean, I had the Packers here at this point. And now when the playoffs started, I thought the Eagles were the team that would get to the Super Bowl. But at the beginning of the year, back in August, when it was hot, when it was sunny, back in August, and now we're here where it's cold and icy at this point, your boy, Paul Gant, and I'm speaking in third person at this point, your boy, Paul Gant, told the world that the Green Bay Packers would be in the Super Bowl. Granted, he told the world that they would play the Cincinnati Bengals. But he did tell the world that the Green Bay Packers would be here. And by golly geez, Wiz, they are here.
And now, and Paul, I give you a lot of credit because we should go back and revisit. And you're right. When you go back and revisit, I remember we had at the end of the NFL preseason, we had Mike Hill, ESPN Mike Hill on. And one of the things that you were high on with regards to the Packers was going to be, and you had said, this year's offense. And when you look at this Super Bowl matchup, though, forgetting about the hype of the Packers and the Steelers, which, you know, two-story franchises, that's impressive in my opinion because this is a first-class NFL offense going against the first-class NFL defense. And I guess from you, you know, the prognosticator du jour of 2010, who's going...
2011 as well.
2011 as well. Who's going to have to play a better game, the Packers O or the Steelers D?
Well, let's look at these playoffs in terms of the Pittsburgh Steelers. If you look at the Pittsburgh Steelers and their run through these playoffs, I mean, you have to say that defense was the calling card in these playoffs. I mean, you start with Baltimore in that situation, in that game with Baltimore. That first half was filled with Pittsburgh Steeler turnovers, which in turn set up the Ravens set them up to score their points and ultimately set them up to go up 21-7 in that particular football game. You look at that second half, and it was funny. It was a total reversal. The Ravens was the team. Flacco started throwing interception. Ray Rice, a guy who never fumbles in that particular football game. And then the Steelers started to capitalize, and they started to put points on the board. And, yes, Ben Roethlisberger made the plays when he had to make the plays in that particular football game. But that game doesn't swing without the play of that Steeler defense. That game doesn't turn out the way it did without the play of that Pittsburgh Steeler defense. I'll give Ben Roethlisberger a lot of credit. When it was time to make the plays, he made the plays in that game against the Ravens. And then you go next week, the following week, I should say, against the New York Jets. In that particular football game, this team jumped out early on the New York Jets. Was that a byproduct of Ben Roethlisberger? No, I think that was more of a byproduct of the running game with Rashad Mendenhall, who did his thing on the ground in that particular football game, over 100 yards in that game, 121 to be exact in that particular football game. So Mendenhall did his thing in that particular football game. Ben Roethlisberger didn't play well. That offense didn't play particularly well. And again, byproducts of that Pittsburgh Steelers defense was scored a touchdown in that particular football game, and which really did a great job against the Jets offense in that game and shut them down, held them to 3 points in that first half. And they essentially, I mean, that touchdown by William Gay, that 19-yard fumble return by William Gay would put the Steelers up 24-0, was essentially the game winner. Not essentially, it was the game winner in that particular game. And that, again, was a byproduct of the Steelers defense. Now, again, when Big Ben had to make the plays, he made the play. Big first down to Antonio Brown, which eventually salted the football game away. So, yes, the Steelers defense is going to have to continue to play like the Steelers defense if the Steelers want to win this football game. But let's not sleep on Ben Roethlisberger either. Let's not sleep on this guy. And if we remember the last time these two teams met each other, they met each other last year. And in that particular football game, Ben Roethlisberger threw for 500 yards in that game. Now, granted, the Green Bay secondary is a lot better this season. The defense is a lot better this season. And remember, in that season, that Packer team came up, 51 points against the Arizona Cardinals in that wild card game where they lost. So if you look at that, and we go back to that and we look at that situation, let's just not say Ben Roethlisberger can't put yards up and can't put numbers up, because when he played this team last season, he put up 500 yards, and the Steelers won in last-second fashion against the Green Bay Packers, and they put up 37 points in that game. So, yes, the Pittsburgh Steelers defense is going to have to come up big in this particular football game. And, yes, I still believe if they don't come up big, Ben Roethlisberger can still make the plays. And he has proven that he can make the plays against this team. And he's proven when it's time to make plays, he can make them. He can make them. And I think he's going to have to make some plays tomorrow, because I think the Green Bay Packers offense is going to put some points up on the board.
Well, I couldn't agree more. I have a feeling this Packers offense at this point is settling in. And I think the interesting thing is, when you look at both of these quarterbacks, they very much play a very similar style. They're very, very comfortable moving outside of the pocket. And when you're a quarterback that's comfortable moving outside of the pocket and you're successful at doing it, defenses have to adjust for that. And I mean, you hear that talk. We hear that all the time. You know, we hear it on the broadcast. You hear it, you know, in the bars. But it's not – that's really, to me, what it is. It's just talk. It's not easy. Defenses are not really trained to adjust on the fly. They're trained and they're taught to run, you know, run a specific play.
Well, I mean, yes, but in terms of adjustments, when it's time to make adjustments, defenses are going to have to make them.
But you know as well as I do, I couldn't agree more. Everyone's going to have to make the adjustments, period, point blank. What I'm saying is, when you look at quarterbacks like a Roethlisberger and like a Rodgers, and even like a Michael Vick in this season, when you're not a one-dimensional out-of-the-pocket guy, when it's not just run or it's not just pass, when you can do both and do both very successfully, there is really not much defenses can do for the adjustment, because it's a double-edged sword. If you play the run, they pass. If you play the pass, they run. And so that's where I say, to me, when you look at a quarterback like a Roethlisberger, like a Aaron Rodgers, they have the competitive advantage against the defense, because it's not, unless the defense plays that quote unquote 60 minutes of football, then it's going. They only need that one or two plays. One of the things I look at is seeing, to me, which of these two quarterbacks can play a better game in the Super Bowl. And when you look at this, obviously the answer is going to be, well, here you have Ben Roethlisberger looking to do something only two other quarterbacks have done, which is in the first 7 years of his NFL career win three Super Bowls, and you're looking at Aikman and Brady, and we all know how Paul Gant feels about Tom Brady. I mean, you get emotional even at the sound.
Well, you know, at times you could accuse me of a man crush when it comes to a Tom Brady. I mean, the lovely long hair and everything. But anyway, I mean, the three Super Bowls, you're right. I mean, Tom Brady, three Super Bowls. Troy Aikman, three Super Bowls. You're talking about elite guys now. I mean, you're talking about, a Hall of Fame type of credentials at this point. And you're also talking dynasty. This would be the third Super Bowl in the last six seasons. That's dynasty talk. That's the stuff that dynasties are made of. And say what you will about Big Ben. I mean, I said this before. You can call him a lot of things. You got the motorcycle accident. He's driving without a helmet. You can call him a big dummy. You have the sexual allegations levied against him by various different women. You can call him a big pervert. But at this point, two Super Bowls and a possibility for three. At some point, call him big dummy, call him a big pervert. At some point, and not even some point now, you're going to have to call this guy a big winner, because two Super Bowls and an opportunity for three. Say what you will about the guy, he's a big winner. Big Ben, big dummy, big pervert, but also a big winner.
He's a beast. Yeah, I mean, well, you know, and that's where, Paul, when you look at this, for Aaron Rodgers now, this is, and I hate to bring up his name again because we know it makes you cringe, but this is where Mark Sanchez wanted to be. But we both know, and I'm willing enough to admit this, we both know if you're going to compare that name and Aaron Rodgers, you certainly have to recognize Aaron Rodgers right now, to me, looks like a guy he's been waiting for this. He's not, you know, he's not here, and we're seeing if he's capable of doing it. Aaron Rodgers, to me, looks like a guy who is capable of doing it. The question remains, can he take that step? You know, can he do what his predecessors did? And when you look at Roethlisberger, we know he can do it. That's why I say it's a very interesting – this is a very interesting game, because it's not, well, can it be done for a Roethlisberger? For a Roethlisberger, it's very simple. You know, is he going to do this? Period.
And, you know, with Ben, he has done it on the big stage, and he's done big things on the big stage in terms of being clutch, in terms of his clutchness, if you will, on the big stage. On the big stage, he has done it. When it's big, Ben is there. I mean, if you look at the game against the Arizona Cardinals in that particular Super Bowl, I mean, it was Ben had to go down the field and bring his Steeler team back. And he did it. Game-winning drive, beautiful catch by Santonio Holmes, but even a beautiful pass by Ben Roethlisberger. That's clutch. When it came against the Ravens this particular season, game-winning drive, led his team down the field. Long pass to Antonio Brown was set up the touchdown, and ultimately which led to the Pittsburgh Steelers beating the Baltimore Ravens in the divisional round. He did it. When it was time against the New York Jets for Ben Roethlisberger and the Pittsburgh Steelers to get a first down to salt the football game away, guess what? He rolled out, found Antonio Brown, ball game, fellas. That's what this guy does. He's clutch. He's tough. He's a beast, as you said. He's a beast. It's not pretty when it comes to Ben Roethlisberger. It ain't pretty, but by golly, it's effective.
Well, you know what?
It ain't pretty.
Paul, Why are you gonna? I mean, I guess it is kind of pretty because to me, I look at Roethlisberger and I look at a quarterback like him and I say, there's a guy that's 6'6". I mean, he makes it look to me. He makes it look pretty. He makes what he does. His I mean, except for last week against the Jets, predominantly his numbers are very clean cut. They are Brady-esque, Paul. His numbers are. Maybe not his look, you know, maybe not his hair. Maybe you're not going to have maybe a man crush on him, but his numbers, to me, shouldn't indicate a crush.
Well, his numbers, I mean, let's look at his first Super Bowl. If you look at his first Super Bowl against the Seattle Supersonics, I do miss the Supersonics in Seattle, and Seattle should have a basketball team, but that's another story for another day. But anyway, if you look at the Steelers and Seahawks and Big Ben's first Super Bowl, I mean, he didn't play well in that game. He didn't play well in that game. Not one of his better football games in terms of playoffs. He didn't play well.
But we're faulting the guy for not playing well in his first Super Bowl that he won.
He won it. I'm not taking anything away from him. He won the game. His team won. I'm not taking anything away from him. But in terms of play, not one of his better plays, not one of his better football games. And Antoine Randle, well, if you remember, first of all, if you look at that game, you had a 75-yard run by Willie Parker, fast Willie Parker, as he was known at the time. And then you had Hines Ward, who caught a 42-yard pass, but from not Ben Roethlisberger, but from Antoine Randle L. And so Ben Roethlisberger, again, did not have one of his better football games, not one of his better games at all. I mean, he completed only 9 passes, and he was 9 for 21 for only 123 yards, and he threw 2 interceptions. And that is a quarterback rating of 22.6. That was his quarterback rating in his first Super Bowl against the Seattle Seahawks. Against the Seattle Seahawks. So if you look at that situation, and again, basketball needs to be back in Seattle. Bring a team to Seattle. They support their basketball team in Seattle. But anyway, 22.6 in that Super Bowl against the Seattle Seahawks. 22.6. Not impressive. Not impressive there. And again, if it wasn't for Antoine Randle L, thank God for Antoine Randle L if you're a Steelers fan. Thank God for fast Willie Parker, if you're a Steelers fan. And some would say thank God for the officials who made some bad calls in that particular game. So, again, not to take anything away from Ben Roethlisberger, because ultimately it comes down to wins and it comes down to losses. And they won. And in doing so, that was Big Ben's first Super Bowl, and he continued it as he played against the Arizona Cardinals. And in that Super Bowl, guess what? Ben Roethlisberger, when it was money time, Big Ben did what Big Ben does, and that is go the length of the field, and that is score a touchdown, and that is get the Pittsburgh Steelers their second title, and get Big Ben his second title, and give them 6 titles in all as they go for number 7 tomorrow
now Monday,
in Dallas,
Paul.
In an icy, cold Dallas.
On the matchup, I guess to me though, much is made about these offenses, much is also made about these defenses. on both sides of the defense, there's some powerhouses. On both sides of the defense, there certainly is playmakers. Do you see either one of these defenses, I don't want to say surprising anyone, but do you see either one of these defenses maybe stealing this game away from their opponent's offense?
Well, I mean, if you look at both of these defenses, they have big playability. I mean, James Harrison with the Steelers, Troy Polamalu. I mean, big playability for the Pittsburgh Steelers in terms of defense. And then you look at the Packers, same, Tremont Williams, big plays in these playoffs. Clay Matthews Jr., Charles Woodson, playmakers. B.J. Raji, playmaker. I mean, so a lot of playmakers in terms of defense with these two teams. A lot of playmakers. A lot of guys with playmaking ability. A lot of guys who have shown the ability to make plays in these playoffs. Tremont Williams, 3 interceptions in these playoffs. Also, I forgot about Sam Shields, who had 2 picks against the Bears. Clay Matthews Jr., who has been a beast in these playoffs. So, yes, both of these defenses have that big playability. Both of these defenses have the ability to steal the show. And do I think that'll be the case tomorrow? No, I don't. I don't. I think it's going to come down to quarterback play. And I think it's going to come down to Rodgers or Roethlisberger. Who can make the most plays between these two? Who can make the most plays? Is it going to be Big Ben? Or is it going to be A-Rodge, Aaron Rodgers? So who can make the plays? Who can make the plays? And also, another thing that's big, Marquise Pouncey has been ruled out. The rookie all-pro center for the Pittsburgh Steelers will not be playing in this football game. Enter Doug Ligurski. Doug Ligurski, a guy who obviously does not have the playmaking ability that Pouncey does. He obviously doesn't have the skill set that Pouncey does. And also, if you look at it, Ligurski, he actually started 4 games at the guard position for the Pittsburgh Steelers during the season. But now you have Ligurski, who is going to be playing and going up against a powerhouse, a tough, strong defensive tackle in B.J. Raji. And that's not going to be a picnic for Ligurski.
And Paul, let's also remember the last time, a very young, talented center, the day or two before, certainly different circumstances, but the day or two before Super Bowl, wasn't there for his team and how that wound up for them.
And you're referring to?
Either your memory is as bad as I thought it was, or I'm certainly referring to Robbins and the Raiders.
Oh, you're talking about Baron Robbins, okay, again with the Raiders.
Well, I'm not talking about the circumstances. What I'm saying is you look at a position where you have a dominant offensive lineman, and certainly in that year the Raiders did, and certainly in this year the Steelers do. And like you said, you're looking at a defensive line now that's going to be able to take advantage. And this is one game. The reason it's always important to me, and I think it's lost sight of, this is one game. And for a player to walk in on one game and be effective at a center position, which I don't think people appreciate the complexity of the center position in today's NFL.
True.
And number two, the game we're talking about. And we're not talking about are they going to get in the playoffs or even are you going to continue to move in the playoffs. You're talking about this is the Super Bowl, man. This isn't the NFC Championship. This isn't a big divisional game. This is the Super Bowl, man. The Super Bowl.
And, yes, arguably the biggest game in the United States, the Super Bowl. I mean, it should be a holiday, really, if you look at it. But anyway, you're right.
You can have all the work.
Also, you look at it this way, too. I think the 2 weeks that the Steelers had to prepare for this football game is to their benefit because now at this point, you're able to coach Legarski up a little bit. He's able to gain a level of focus during these 2 weeks to truly understand what he needs to do in order to be effective in this particular football game. So these 2 weeks are a godsend for the Pittsburgh Steelers.
Having
those 2 weeks and having the opportunity to, again, coach this guy up and get him ready for this game is definitely an advantage for the Pittsburgh Steelers. And okay. So you look at it now. I mean, obviously, on paper, with Legarski as the starting center, you have to say advantage Packers. You have to say advantage Packers. Advantage Packers in that particular situation.
If you want to repeat it and shove it down everyone's throats, then you have to say it. My question is why? I mean, first of all, I'm sure the Packers knew, I'm sure the Steelers knew, but let's be real, Paul. This is the first game you're starting as an NFL center. You think that this is where this young man wants to be placed? 2 weeks, 1 week?
Yes, I understand. It's just, you know, he's not a guy who's very familiar. He's a guy who is making his first start at center. Yes, I understand that. But the benefit is he did get some playing time, not at the center position, but at the guard position during the season. Benefit. That's a benefit to him. And also, they get 10 days, 2 weeks, to coach this guy up and to get him familiar with everything, all the line calls, everything. Because the center essentially is the quarterback of the offensive line. So you give him an opportunity, you coach him up, you give him an opportunity here. And again, this is a big spot. This is a big spot for Doug Legarski. But the reason I say advantage Packers is all pro centers, Pro Bowl centers don't grow on trees.
Yeah, thank you.
If you're missing a Pro Bowl center in Marquise Pouncey, you have to say advantage Green Bay Packers when you have a guy like B.J. Raji who has been getting it done in these playoffs and also has proven that he's quite a dancer in these playoffs. But anyway, I mean, B.J. Raji is a powerful lineman. And he's a playmaking lineman and a guy who you're going to have to focus on, a guy you're going to have to watch if you want to be effective and if you want to win and you want to beat the Green Bay Packers. That's the guy you have to look out for, and that's B.J. Raji. And so if you're missing your all-pro center, if he's gone, you have to say, advantage, Green Bay Packers. You have to say in that particular situation, advantage, Green Bay Packers. And also, like you pointed out, his first career start at center. And you're talking about a B.J. Raji who has 6.5 sacks from the interior line position. So this is a playmaking guy, and a guy who's proven to have good hands, and a guy you have to say, in terms of advantage, if you want to say an advantage, if you're saying advantage, disadvantage, you have to say advantage, Green Bay Packers. And let me know what you guys think out here about the Super Bowl 45 in Dallas, Texas, a cold and icy Dallas, Texas. The numbers to call, 646-727-3070. That's 646-727-3070. And again, you can listen to the show at blogtalkradio.com/PGAN. You can listen to the show at blogtalkradio.com/PGAN. And you can send email messages to the show at gofort.gant@gmail.com. That's goforit.net@gmail.com. Big Super Bowl tomorrow, Super Bowl 45. It's going to be a biggie. It's going to be an interesting one. And, you know, I mean, these are teams I believe are two evenly matched teams, two teams who are peaking and playing great football at this point. So it's going to be an interesting, it's going to be a good, great Super Bowl. And also, a quick reminder, we will be joined by, expect to be joined by former WBO junior welterweight champion Devin Alexander, who is expected to drop on by, stop by, and talk about his fight against Timothy Bradley as he was on the losing end of that particular fight.
I don't know about you, Paul, but that whole that
a fight that was
well
for junior welterweight supremacy, a fight that was the biggest of his career, definitely was the biggest of his career, and a fight that some say he quit, some accused him of quitting, which I don't know is fair. So a fight that was filled with headbutts.
But we're going to get into this now because I'm sure we'll be shortly joined by Devin, and it's a good time to switch gears. And it's got me, and my pain is in a little bit of an uproar because watching that fight, hearing what happened afterward, and certainly I felt like, you know, they both came to fight. It probably would have been and could have been a much better fight had, you know, both of them come there to fight. The first headbutt to me, I thought, I always say the first time you do anything, you have to believe it's an accident. But it was just, I thought that, you know, unfortunately, Devin, there's a time, and you know, you and I always have to disclaim, you know, Devin is a guest of the show, repeated guest of the show, so we certainly want to let everyone know, you and I have a personal bias. But that being said, you know, when you're up to 3 and 4 headbutts, there has to at some point be an understanding that accident or no accident, that you have to control your body in that ring at all times, period.
Well, also, I'm not saying Bradley purposely brought it to Alexander, but Kevin Cunningham, the trainer for Devin Alexander, told the world, told everybody who would listen, that this guy has butted his last 6 opponents, and this guy leads with his head. Now, you have to look at this, too. When you have a fighter who you have a southpaw going up against a conventional fighter, because of the angles of the punches and the way these two guys throw their punches, when you have a southpaw and a conventional fighter, that lends itself to possible clashes of the head and possible headbutts. I mean, it's a possibility with that it could happen. Because of that, it could happen. But also, like you said, one time, yes, 2 times, you start to question it a little bit. And you look at the first butt, which was over the right eye, bad cut in that particular situation. I mean, it happened in the 3rd round. Devin actually needed 4 stitches to close that one up. I mean, at that point, you have to say disadvantage Alexander at that point because now he's fighting with a cut.
But the fight was over. I mean, but then that's why I get upset. I get emotional. Because to me, and again, it'll be interesting to hear Devin, a boxer, explain to the boxing world. Headbutt is worse than getting punched because you're going to get swollen on the bone and you're getting the blood in your eye. I mean, when you're getting punched, there could just be a skin tear, but so not much, you know, the swelling of the bone because you're having, you know, that's bone on bone contact. And I think, again, I think, you know, it's important that as sports fans we start to recognize that, you know, for these guys, this is Devin's career. You know, And I thought, though, Devin, the one thing that he said, and we're certainly going to get his take on it, but he was smart. You know, they talk about after the fight, and he made it very clear, there's a rematch clause in these contracts, and he deserved a rematch. Because this fight, in my opinion...
But also, you have to look at that. There is a rematch clause, but it's up to HBO if they want to exercise that clause. And judging, I mean, by the fight, it wasn't an aesthetically beautiful fight, an aesthetically pleasing fight. And so there may not be a rematch in terms of Alexander and Bradley, at least not right now. It may be a down-the-line situation. I mean, now Bradley, after the fight, his promoter, Gary Shaw, was talking, Mayweather talking Pacquiao, and possibly even Amir Khan. So
they're crazy. But, I mean, Paul, because the bottom line was, and the scorecards were abominable. The judges were... I mean, at the end, when you're headbutted, like he was at the end of the third round, I severely question where, you know, how you expect a fighter to continue and fight when you don't have your full quote unquote let's call it full faculty.
Everybody, you know, you got a lot of guys coming out. Kind of like, you know, you got a lot of boxers. You had boxers coming out. You had everybody coming out criticizing Alexander after the second butt. And they're saying, you know what, the guy could have continued. You're talking about a championship fight, a unification fight, a fight right in depth that was big. It's big for him. It's big for him. And big for Bradley, big for both of the fighters. And so you have people coming out saying, you know what, you had the second butt, but you know what? You need to continue in that particular situation because guess what? It's a big opportunity for you, an opportunity that you may not see again. And so you have to fight through the headbutts, and you have to take this to the end. And judging by the scorecards, he would have needed a knockout, essentially. Well, you had – let me look at the cards again. But from what I saw, he would have needed a knockout. Essentially,
that's my point.
Well, let's look at the cards real quick. I mean, yeah. Let's look at the cards real quick. Yes, 98-93, 97-93, and he had 96-95. So, essentially, he would have needed a knockout, according to the scorecards, to have won that particular fight.
But let's look at that. No, Paul. Here, give me one second. But because there is an important, I think, again, in the world of a fight of that magnitude, to be decided where, and this is why I say this is a problem with boxing. This is more than just a problem with this fight. The problem inside of boxing, in that you're going to headbutt of that magnitude in the third round. How does this fighter have a level playing field? You know, how can it be said that a fighter who's got bone bruising above his eye, he's got a huge cut, he's dripping blood in round three, and it wasn't a knockdown. To me, boxing needs to address this issue because here's a guy in Devlin Alexander where if he says to me the argument I'm going to make, which is he's basically got one hand tied behind his back for the rest of the fight, which is only three rounds old.
Well, I mean, headbutts are—it's just the nature of boxing. It happens.
Yep. Well, it happens four times, Paul.
Now, these things happen within boxing. Headbutts happen. Now, I will say this: you know, I mean, it was tough on him having that cut over the right eye. That was tough. But if it's ruled an accidental headbutt, unintentional headbutt, and the doctors, you say you can continue, and the doctors say you can continue, so you got to keep going. Now, the last one, I mean, he said it was burning at that point, and at that point he couldn't continue. The doctors said was feared that there was possible nerve damage with the eye, and he couldn't continue. So, I mean, and people are saying at this point, you know, there is a possibility that, you know, in your head that maybe you're behind in this fight and that you're going to need these rounds if you want to win this fight. And so people are saying that maybe they believe that with all this on the line, many are saying that he quit. I'm not saying he did. I'm not saying he quit. I mean, because no man, and I said this when it comes to Jay Cutler, if you say you have a headache, you got a headache. If you say you got a stomach ache, you got a stomach ache. And you say if your knee hurts, you can't play. If you say it hurts, it hurts. And if you're saying that you're having trouble seeing out of that eye and it's burning, and the doctors say that you can't continue, guess what? You can't continue. And granted, boxing is a game where it's just you in there, and that you know you got to keep going. It's a tough sport. It's a tough sport. It's one man trying to place his will on another man. This is a tough sport. It's a tough game. And Devin now, I mean, this was a big opportunity for him. Big opportunity for Bradley. Now, would I like to see this fight again? I would. But will we see this fight? Who knows? I mean, at least not in the near future. We may not see this fight again. At least not in the near future. And so there has been talk, like I said before, that possibly and more likely, Bradley's probably going to go against Khan in a unification bout. And that's saying if Khan gets past his bout in April, which at this point he doesn't have an opponent for. But if he gets past that bout, you're probably going to see Bradley Khan in a 140-pound unification fight. And then there was talk that even if HBO does not pick up the Bradley-Alexander fight, Bradley-Alexander 2, I should say, then Alexander still would be guaranteed an HBO date. So that's a good situation for him. He's going to have an HBO date. So whether it be against Bradley again or whether it be against Marcos Maidana, who has been a lot of talk that that's who will be, he will fight next, and essentially in a de facto junior welterweight tournament where you had Khan and Maidana fight first in December, Khan get the W, and then you had Bradley and Alexander fought last week, and then you had, which Bradley got the W. So now there's talk that they're going to match Bradley and Khan up, and I guess in the loser's bracket, you'll have Alexander and Maidana. So, I mean, that's the talk that we're hearing right now, and you know Devin can clear that up and give us an understanding where he's going next. I mean, at least with that cut, he's going to be sidelined for a little bit, so he probably will not fight again probably until the summertime. So it should be interesting to get Devin's take on the fight, which was a fight that a lot of people were looking for. I was looking forward to the fight. A lot of people was looking forward to this fight. I mean, you had a situation where you had two American title holders, and it was for unification. It was for supremacy at the 140-pound division. And actually, it was the first unification fight between two undefeated American title holders in 24 years. And only the third time ever that has happened. So this was a big bout in terms of boxing, and this was a big bout for these two guys. But ultimately, with Devin coming on the short end of the stick in this particular fight, it's only one loss. There is an opportunity again. You have another HBO date. If you want another shot, go through, do what you got to do, and the next shot will be waiting for you. So, I mean, this is an opportunity for Devin to kind of get back, recollect his thoughts, get himself right and ready to go for that next fight. Because, again, opportunity there to make money. There's opportunity there to make money. And so make that money, get yourself right, and make that next run so you can become the head and the top of the 140-pound division. If you're Devin Alexander. But definitely should be interesting to get his take on this fight. That's definitely something I'm looking forward to, as Devin Alexander will be joining us in a 2 o'clock hour. And so it definitely should be interesting to get his take on this big fight and see what's next for this guy. see what's next for him. See what's next for him. And I want to touch on something real quick in terms of the NBA. And yesterday, the NBA did the right thing. Initially, if you remember, Kevin Love got the snub. This is a guy who's leading the league in rebounds with 15 points. This is a guy who's averaging 21 points a game. But Kevin Love was not named to the All-Star team. But yesterday, David Stern, right or wrong, and, of course, Yao Ming was voted as the starter in this game. And, of course, Yao Ming is out for the season. So, of course, Yao Ming will not be playing in this game. So, David Stern named Kevin Love as his replacement, and rightfully so. Kevin Love is playing some great basketball. Like I said, 21 points, 15 rebounds, had a 30-30 game this season against the New York Knicks. So, I mean, this guy has been playing some great basketball. Now, granted, he's on a bad basketball team in Minnesota, but guess what? He's still putting up numbers. You can't discount 21 and 15. You can't discount 21 and 15 and close to 44% from behind the three-point arc. That you cannot discount. And a guy who's had 34 straight double-doubles. So he's getting it done. The NBA righted the wrong. David Stern righted the wrong and named him to the All-Star team. So congratulations to Kevin Love as he's named to the NBA All-Star team for the Western Conference and replaces Yao Ming. So, I mean, it should be interesting. I mean, All-Star games are All-Star games. And if you watched Pro Bowl last week, you want to talk about the cure for insomnia. That was last week's Pro Bowl game. That, my friend, is the cure for insomnia.
So you're saying,
I mean, you want to talk about some boring football. If you want to talk about boring, that, my friend, was boring. Did you watch?
No. I mean, come on, Paul. Who's got time? We're intelligent people. Who's got time to watch that? Really, you're right. I mean, it wasn't just boring. It's where's the value in that?
It was almost like touch football.
Well, it was even probably worse because at least in touch football, there would have been, you know, a few girls on the sidelines with pom poms. I mean, at certain regards, the NFL has to. You know, I always say with all these All-Star games, I think the only All-Star game that has any value anymore, anything left. The NBA, I think, puts on a great show, but it's actually kind of interesting to watch the last couple innings of a baseball game because it has a value. Say what you want about why they did it, but it's actually kind of interesting to watch, you know, to know when you wake up the next morning and say, oh, well, you know, the National League, because they won a game, they have home field, you know, for the World Series.
Yes, but again,
it might be stupid. It might be stupid, Paul. But again, I just think these All-Star games, all of them. The problem is that it, for a sports fan, it gets back to value. There's no value in it.
I understand. You know, when in terms of baseball and that whole deal, but the All-Star game that shouldn't be in baseball. I think that's a joke. That shouldn't be. I mean, it's the All-Star game is a showcase. I mean, if you feel that way, then don't have the game. The game should not mean home field advantage for the National League or the American League. I think it's a bad idea. I think it's stupid. And in terms of the Pro Bowl, that was touch football. That was not real football that you saw during the Pro Bowl. It was boring, quite frankly. I mean,
the biggest problem with the NFL Pro Bowl is the bottom line is, you know, you're talking about a game that's played by real men that has real consequences, and you play that game the way you play a real football game, somebody's probably going to get hurt. And nobody wants to get hurt, period. So, again, the bottom line when you look at the NFL is how are they going to deal with, how are they going to reconcile making that game relevant?
Yeah, I mean, how do you make it relevant? I mean, there's really no way to make it relevant. I mean, the guys don't want to get hurt out there.
That's the problem.
And when you play football, anytime you play football, it's a great opportunity to get hurt. Guys don't want to get hurt out there. I mean, so there's really not a way you can make that game any different than what it already is. I don't really know what you can do in that situation to make the game better. I don't know what you can do. I mean,
there's nothing.
It comes down to it is what it is, but at the same time, I mean, there's guys who's making a lot more money than we are to change it and to make it entertaining. Good luck to you, whoever you are, because I don't think it's possible. I don't think it's possible. But it's bad football. In terms of All-Star games, all of them are fairly bad. Except, I like the NBA All-Star game.
I like what the NBA does
with their All-Star game. To me, that's the best out of the four majors in terms of All-Star games. The hockey All-Star game, I mean, that's not real hockey because it's just a scoring fest. I mean, that's just a scoring fest. Baseball, I guess now, with having the home field advantage on the line, it's a lot more competitive of a football game, baseball game, I should say. In terms of the NFL, I mean, it's just boring. It's just boring. In the NBA, it's, you know, you got it's exciting. I find the NBA to be a fairly good All-Star game. And also, when those games start to tighten up in the NBA All-Star game, they start to get serious and they start to defend a little more. Granted, the first part of it, I mean, I guess in a lot of ways, it's kind of like and-one, not really real basketball. It's just, you know, going up and down, fast-break type football. And that's all it is, just going up and down, fast-break type football, if you look at that. It's just fast-break football. It's fast-break basketball, I should say. That's all it is. That's all it is, fast-break up and down basketball, big-time dunks, LeBron James, the rest of those guys. But it's a showcase. It's a showcase. It's a showcase. But in terms of fixing the NFL All-Star game, I don't know what you do.
Well,
I really don't know what you do. I mean, that's a great vacation to Hawaii for whoever goes.
You know, that would be like, and I hate to, like, it would be if boxing had some kind of an all-star fight. You can't, the problem in that sport almost for the all-star game is they need to find a way to make it less relevant, because it's not real football. No two boxers are going to.
The funny thing, not to interrupt you, but the funny thing about the Pro Bowl is it did great ratings. I mean, it did great ratings.
Well, but you know why, Paul?
I think it was one of the highest rated Pro Bowls in a long time. It did some great ratings.
They're always going to get great ratings, and you know that, because the bottom line is they need to get – it's football. You and I and everyone are still going to watch the game because of what? Well, we're going to watch the game because certainly – you know, we feel like, or for whatever the reason, the game in and of itself has, it's a game. It's a football game. We want to watch it, period, point blank.
I didn't watch much of it.
There's a lot of people out there, and you know this as well as I do, there's too many people out there that do, because it is a good, it's an NFL game, period.
It is, but it was just, that's not an NFL game.
Paul, you and I completely are on the same page. I am not going to watch that. To me, it's not real. I don't enjoy it. I don't see it as value. It's a waste. It's You know what I mean?
It's definitely a waste. I mean,
you see, I tell people all the time, but I'll even go to, I mean, like what they did with hockey this year was a joke. Not that hockey matters, and thankfully, you know, on this show, we should again reiterate, hockey doesn't. It's not. I mean, there's soccer, and then there's hockey. There's badminton, and then there's hockey.
I wouldn't say that. I would put hockey over soccer. But
But what they did with this All-Star game, trying to make it like a high school pick 'em, is a joke. It got the last 2 minutes of SportsCenter at 1 o'clock in the evening. I mean, it's irrelevant. Like you said, it's hockey. B, it's the All-Star game, and C, it's just scoring. You know.
Well, the reality is, in watching that Pro Bowl, I think I would rather go out to the backyard, move some snow around, take a magnifying glass, and just sit there and watch grass grow. And wow. The cold and sub-zero degree weather, I'd rather sit there and just watch grass grow than watch what was on Sunday night. That's what I'd rather do. That's what I would have rather have done than to watch that mess of a football game, if you want to even call it football. That was touch football. That's what that was.
Well, that was touch football. Well, but let, you know what? In certain regards, I think if you slow things down and you say, what does, and I don't disagree with you. I thought, like I said, Major League Baseball puts, I think, a very real situation, which is home field advantage. I don't think you're certainly going to do that for a Super Bowl because it's a one game, and until they have established whether they can have a Super Bowl in cold weather successfully, albeit this year I think they have established they will and they can. But are they going to do that? One of the things, you know, the NFL could do and could look at doing is more of what the NBA has done, which is high behind smoke and mirrors, which is this, it's a talent fest. And for a decade or two decades, you know, Paul, they have successfully poured their athletes into putting them out there for the dunk contest, the three-point shooting contest. They get the old game. Now they have the rookie game. It's a weekend. It's an all-star weekend. It's a ratings maybe in terms of based on the NFL in comparison to the NBA, it doesn't rate as well. But when you look at what it attracts, it gets a lot of people. The dunk contest is the biggest reason I think a lot of people became basketball fans. If you translate that, you know, if the NFL is serious about making it relevant, then maybe hiding behind some smoke and mirrors, maybe recognizing that potentially that it very much could be, hey, let's look at bringing in some other levels and layers, if you will, levels and layers of talent. But, you know, the pump, pass, and kick, or most accurate quarterback, best hands, fastest whatever. They could create events, and in the middle of that, or at the end of it, like the NBA does, it culminates to, you know, the game.
And I hate to interrupt you, but we're now being joined by former junior welterweight WBO champion Devin Alexander. Devin, how are you? WBC champion, I should say. Devin, how are you?
Hey, what's going on? How's it going, my friend?
How are you, sir? I mean, thanks for joining us here, sir. It's greatly appreciated.
No problem. Anytime.
And now, Devin, when you heard this, before we get to the details of the fight, at the end of the fight, when you heard the decision and you realized that you lost for the first time in your career, what was your initial reaction?
Well, you know, of course, it's not a good feeling. Definitely not. You know, you don't see yourself ever hearing those words or, you know, ever even seeing a day, so... I'm a competitive person, and I always like to win all the time. So it definitely wasn't a good feeling.
And so So, Devin, getting into the fight now. Kevin Cunningham, your manager, your trainer, told the world, he told everybody, told the referee, that Timothy Bradley has headbutted his last six opponents. He tends to lead with his head. When you were cut with that headbutt on the right side, your right eye in that third round, which you eventually would need four stitches to close, did you feel like, man, this is what my trainer was talking about?
Definitely. Well, you know, like I said in the post-interview, I mean, you can't train for headbutts. You know, all you can try to do is try to avoid as best way you can. But the thing is that, you know, they hurt it. They was hurting. You know, they was affecting me. You know, people can say what they want to say, but let you get headbutted and blood getting in your eye, and you see if you try to fight and with the pain and the eyes and everything like that, see if you can fight through it. But,
Devin, that's, we were talking about that before you got on, and one of the things I think it's to me it's a big issue in boxing today, which is, you know, like you said, when these headbutts occur, it's very easy after the fight to say, oh, well, you know, he lost stability, you know, he didn't jab as well in rounds, you know, let's say for you, you weren't able to fight or you this, but when you have that happen, especially in round three, and that headbutt results in an open wound,
right?
How is a boxer when you can't plan for? I understand it's an accident, and Paul and I said the first headbutt, I will say it was an accident. When you get the three and four headbutts, there needs to be a reconciliation that Devin Alexander is not able to fight 100%, but not because of Devin Alexander, and certainly not because of Timothy Bradley's abilities, but because of accidental headbutts.
Well, yeah, that is true. That is true. He was headbutting me throughout the fight, but I wasn't really tripping off, you know, the headbutt. I was just trying to continue to fight and continue to do what I could do and try to win the fight, you know. But you never can prepare for those things, and you never can expect those things either, you know. We tried our best to avoid them, and like I said, they was pretty hard, you know, and it should be something, you know, said about him keeping headed by me, but the referee insists on they was accident. So, hey, what can you do?
Did you think those headbutts were accidental?
I'm not sure, but, you know, at the end of the fight, Larry Merchant was saying because of his height, he comes in, you know, with his head, and he tried to get to you. So, I don't know. I don't know if it was intentional or not.
Right.
Well, let me ask you this, Devin. Take us through, though, for you. And I know you probably replayed it a million times. But, but I focused on the first one a lot. Because when I watched that fight, when I saw the first one and then the last one, to me, the first one and the last one for you were the hardest two, because you weren't obviously, to me, expecting the first one. But what happened to you when you got that first headbutt?
I was like, oh, man, there it goes. I'm like, gosh, I've been cut, you know, I got to fight through adversity early in the fight, you know, which I was hoping not happen, but it happened, so. I'm like, oh, man, hoping it ain't too bad, you know, hoping it don't affect me, my vision or anything, just continue to fight and let the cut man do his job and do what I got to do to continue to win the fight. So that was going through my head and, you know, just sticking to the game plan.
And now, Devin, we move to the 10th round now, and this time you were butted on your left eye. You complained about a burning sensation. Tell us what happened there.
Well, when he cut me on that eye, it was in the right side of my cornea, and the doctor was saying that he had to stop it because it was on my nerve, which is on a corner of my eye, and it was kind of split. So, you know, it was kind of blurry for me to even see. So he said he's going to stop the fight, you know, and I couldn't argue with him because he said it could paralyze my eye. So. Of course, you know, I ain't trying to get paralyzed, you know, but,
right.
You know, that's what the doctor said. You know, I would have kept fighting if he would have said, okay, you're good to go, you know. But it was burning, and he did hit me in the corner of my cornea in my left eye. So the doctor stopped the fight.
So you're saying, essentially, if the doctor was saying, Devin, you can still go, you would have continued in that fight?
Definitely, because, I mean, at that point, the it's out of your hands. It's what the doctor says, you know. It's what the doctor says. If the doctor says I can continue to go, of course I'm going to go out and continue and win the fight. So, but he did. So he stopped the fight.
We're talking to former WBC and IBF junior welterweight champion Devin Alexander, who was gracious enough to talk to us this Saturday afternoon. Now, Devin, you have a lot of people coming out. I saw Paulie Malignaggi come out. You have everybody else coming out saying, you know what, this guy, he quit, and he could have continued. Fair or unfair, guys are coming out. Guys are saying that you could have continued. When you heard all the talk, all that was written about this situation, what was your reaction?
Well, I was reading. I wasn't even on the internet because I knew it was going to be criticism from after the fight anyway. But, you know, them people that is past this, I think, whoever is coming out and talking, you know, let them get headbutted, you know what I mean, tremendously by a huge head dude and, you know, by and a few times my head, you know, hard, you know, and let them and see what they say, you know. But, you know, why are they even comment? You know, Malignaggi is irrelevant now. So,
right.
It is what it is. You know, I'd rather have my health, you know, and see out of my left eye than fighting again and, you know, in a rematch, because it is a rematch. So, hey.
Now, Devin, I was actually looking at the CompuBox number, and I saw that you outlanded him by one punch. And in terms of power punches, you outlanded him there, too, as well. I mean, granted, in terms of scorecards, you lost the fight. But is there anything that you could have done differently to have won this fight?
Well, throw my head, Buzz, you know. But still, I think... But still, all in all, you know, I'm my own worst critic. You know, I always think I could do a lot more to pull a fight off. I always think I could do more. But, you know, when the game plan was to, you know, go in there and keep him on the end of my punches and don't let him get too close to me, you know. And, you know, every time he did come in, it was a headbutt. So the game plan that I had, I couldn't focus on it because I had to try to keep him off me and keep him away and try to, you know, avoid that. So,
and Devin,
you
bring up, but it's very interesting that you talk now because it's well, to me, it was well written. I think, and I credit your opponent for saying that if you're allowed to box your fight, you know, he said if we let Devin box, Devin's gonna, and his exact words were, we boxed the hell out of you. And to me, when I read that after the fight, you hate to think somebody does something intentionally, but you got to look at numbers, and you see four headbutts, and you have to wonder, when you say that after a fight about your opponent, that if you let him box you, you're probably going to lose, and you have four headbutts that stop a fight, and you look at these judges' scorecards, because I told Paul, when we were prepping for your coming on the show, it sickens me. I saw this fight and I said, this is why I always say this is a big problem inside of boxing, is that well, you could just you butt somebody, and this has been going on for decades. You butt somebody and it just takes them right out of their game, whether it does it to you or even if you don't get cut, even if you don't, you know, get bone structure damage, it makes the boxer think, what are they going to do next?
Yeah, and the first headbutt, I'm like, oh man. So just continue to stay focused, but you gotta think about it. I'm cut, so it's gonna be right there. The blood's gonna be dripping in your eye. So you gotta try to do the best you can and continue to try to follow the game plan.
Yeah.
And now, Devin, you talked about the rematch, and HBO does have the option to give the rematch or to air the rematches, if you will.
Yeah.
But at this point, there's been talk that they may pass on it. Will there be a rematch, or how's the situation going to play out?
Well, I don't doubt that Bradley's going to go another route. Of course, because if he does rematch me, you know, he knows I'm going to murderize him. But I don't think he's going to take the rematch. But which is okay. I could take the other route. I could take the other route because all this fight did was lit another fire, you know, to me, and it just taught me a lot more. You know, it just made me increase my level of confidence even more. So, you know, we just got to sit down and see what my manager thinks, and we're just going to take it one fight at a time still.
So do you plan on staying up on the sidelines to at least the summertime?
Well, we're going to see. We have a two-fight deal, so I think that's before July, I'm sorry. We have to fight two fights before July, so you can expect me back in the ring before July.
And Devin, I was reading actually your Facebook page, and I saw a quote that you had, and it says, "They say what don't kill you makes you legendary. It's just a small roadblock to solidify me as one of the best." Well, what does that quote mean to you?
Well, I mean, it means that, you know, you got to go through certain things, I think, you know, to get to where you really want to be. You know, the one thing I do, I don't like losing. I don't like losing, but you definitely still have to look at the positives, and you got to look at what just happened, and you have to analyze it, and you got to, you know, put that beside it and just still become the best in the division. A guy after the fight told me, you know, Sugar Ray Leonard lost to Roberto Duran, and he's one of the, you know, best fighters in the world. So you just got to, you know, suck it up and go back to the drawing board and make yourself better. And that quote I had was like, you know, this is only going to make me better. You know, minor setbacks. Everybody has setbacks, you know, but you just got it's about you coming back and showing how true of a champion you are.
Now, Devin,
right.
let me ask you this. What do you, and again, it should be known that at your age, you are not just considered a young fighter. You're considered a very young fighter. But how do you now, this is now another, to me, I talked about 2 weeks ago before the fight, you had your fight with the nerves in your hometown, and you won, and you admitted that the nerves, you know, it got you. This is a fight where you walk in and you were not able to even fight your fight, and you lost. How important is this for your growth when you look at it, you know, now, where it may sting a little bit, but do you take a lot away from this saying, I may have won?
I am definitely taking a lot from this, a lot. I mean, like you said, I am 23 years old, and that was another thing after the fight. I was thinking, you know, I'm 23 years old, and I'm continuing to learn. You know, I just need to lie for an average 23-year-old who's trying to make themselves known in the boxing game and in the boxing world. So this is only going to, you know, make me even better, make me even, you know, more hungrier, you know. And I'm glad I got a chance to experience it right now, you know, and as opposed to me experiencing when I'm 28, 29, that way I can know how to deal with it.
Right. Now, Devin, there has been talk that the winner of this fight would probably face Amir Khan, and the loser would probably face Marcos Maidana. Is Maidana in the future for Devin Alexander?
Definitely. The thing is with me, I don't care who I fight. You know, now after this performance or after this fight, you know, it doesn't even matter because whoever I'm getting in the ring is, I'm going to demolish. Not trying to be arrogant or anything, not trying to be thinking I'm all there or thinking I'm, you know, better than anybody. But, you know, it's just a thing that happened where this fight just lit something in me, you know, and, you know, I hate to lose. So I got to come back even fierce.
And is there any ill will towards Timothy Bradley after all the headbutts and all that transpired in that particular fight?
No way. I'm not a man to hold grudge. I'm not a man to make excuses. I'm not a man to, you know, have no ill will towards anybody. This is a fight. This is a business. This is the way it went. You know, when it's all said and done, it's still a business. It's still a business, and you still
right.
gotta go on to the next one. You know, you can't dwell off the past. The past is over. Now it's time to move forward. And like I said, what you do, you know, in the future is what's gonna, you know, solidify your career and what people are gonna be talking about, you know, for years to come.
Right. And did any fighters reach out to you after this loss? And did you get any great advice from any former fighters or any current fighters?
I just been resting this week. I just been resting and I
right.
just been chilling this week. So I haven't been really out too much and just spending time with the family, you know. So I
right.
haven't been out. So I probably got a few messages and stuff. That I ain't checked yet, so I'll check that and see what people's feedback is on it and everything. But anything anybody says, if it's negative or positive, it's only going to motivate me, you know. And I'm just happy that I got opportunity to, you know, be in this situation. And I'm still in a good situation, so we're going to take it in stride.
Right. Definitely, we appreciate you stopping by this afternoon, sir, taking time out. I know it's a tough loss for you, but keep your head up, man, and keep going. And you're only 23 years old. You got a bright future ahead of you, and just keep doing what you do. Greatly appreciate
Thanks a lot,
it,
my
sir.
Man. Thanks for having me again, y'all.
Take care,
Thank
David.
You. Take care.
Okay.
Devin Alexander, former WBC, former IBF, junior welterweight champion, gracious enough to stop by, gracious enough to talk about his fight with Timothy Bradley, the first loss of his career. He came out on the short end of the stick, but, man, the guy is humble. He's gracious. He's a gentleman, and, I mean, I really appreciate him stopping by this afternoon and talking to us and giving us his thoughts on a tough night for him. I mean, it was a night that was a big opportunity for him, a big chance for him to really make a mark in his boxing game at this point in time. But the reality of it is he lost, and everybody loses. So this is definitely an opportunity for him to learn from what happened in that fight and come back stronger, come back hungrier, as he said, and come back a better fighter. And I expect Devin to do that. And, again, I greatly appreciate him stopping by and giving his thoughts on the fight. I mean, the guy, he's a very humble guy, and I wish him nothing but the best of luck. And it's kind of hard not to root for him after talking to him and after hearing him talk about the fight. It's hard not to root for the guy. Well, what were your thoughts on Devin and talking about the fight? Jeremy.
We both know, and that's the thing. Like I've always been impressed since the first time we were introduced to Devin. For him to be as young as he is, over a decade younger than both of us, I think he is very poised. And it's rare to see an athlete as young in an environment in a sport in which he's in where it's very individualized. There's not the team around him, and he is, to me, is very well-spoken. He seems extremely genuine, and one thing that I've always liked the most about him is he goes out there, and to me, he really does win. Like you said, he does try to win. He didn't seem you don't hear him making excuses, where maybe he could have made some excuses. We've always, you and I have quietly been very impressed with Devin, and we only, you know, wish him in the best and having a young and a bright career.
Right. And definitely, it's always a pleasure talking to the guy. a stand-up guy, and anybody coming off a tough loss, his first loss of his career, and anybody that's willing to talk about it and willing to give his thoughts on it, I mean, this is a guy came on our show after the Kotelnik fight, after a victory, but also give him credit for this. He came back after a loss on our show to talk about it. That's when you know a guy has a lot of character, a lot of integrity, because you know what? He came when it was great after the Kotelnik fight, and he also came when it was bad after losing to Timothy Bradley in a big, big fight, and a fight that was for not only unification in the 140-pound division, but a fight that could have meant a lot more money and bigger opportunities. We're talking possibly Mayweather's and Pacquiao's of the world. So give him a lot of credit for stopping by when it was good, and give him a lot of credit for stopping by when it was bad. And I want to switch gears now. This is a big day, and could be a big day to a guy who's a friend to the show, a guy who's been on the show numerous times, a guy that, you know, we have had the pleasure of interviewing. We have had the pleasure, you guys have had the pleasure of hearing him throughout this football season, giving his insight on the season, giving his insight about his career and all of it. And that is the one, the only, Willie Rofe. And this is a big day as we find out today the class of 2011 Hall of Fame class in the NFL. The Hall of Fame 2011 class, we will find out today who will be in this Hall of Fame class. Who will be in this class? I mean, actually, funny thing, Willie Rofe actually texted me yesterday, and he told me to check out a particular article on FoxSports.com, Jason Whitlock, who actually wrote an article, who he believes that if Willie Rofe does not get in this particular time, this time around, it would actually make him cry. And so Willie texted me, and I saw that article. And, Whitlock makes some very good points on why Willie Rofe should be a Hall of Famer. I mean, he's an 11-time Pro Bowler. I mean, the guy was one of the best at his position. He was one of the best at his position. And Whitlock is saying that actually Rofe is one of the five best offensive linemen of all time. So, I mean, that's big praise. That's high praise. And I know I've Willie gave a list, and I gave a list last week of who will be in, but I've had to amend that a little bit. And also, if you look at it, five modern-day players can go in that one class, and you can have seven if it's two old-time players, if it's some old-time players. So the list can be anywhere between four players to seven players, but it can only be five modern-day players. So judging by that criteria, here's who I think will be in the Hall of Fame in the 2011 Hall of Fame class. I got to go with Chris Carter. I'm going to go with Deion Sanders. I'm going to go with Marshall Faulk. I'm going to go with Willie Rofe. I'm going to go with Charles Haley. And I'm going to go with Ed Sable, the founder of NFL Films. I got six people going in. And Rofe, Faulk, Carter, Sanders, and Ed Sable. And Charles Haley. Six people going in. That's who I think will get in. That's who I think belongs in the 2011 Hall of Fame class. Any arguments there?
No, I mean, you and I have it, you know, we have them exactly the same. I've been saying, we've talked, you know, off air and alike, and I have always said, and I think it was interesting, few weeks ago, I'm never good with names, but I'm always good with positions, a kicker, Paul, NFL kicker we have.
Nick Lowry.
Unfortunately, there are so many positions in the NFL that deserve the spotlight. The Hall of Fame is very political. But there are few players that had the career and the impact on the offensive linemen that Willie Rove had. And I think when you look at an athlete like Willie Rove, you recognize he definitively changed guard play during, you know, his tenure in the NFL. There you go, King. He was one of the first very agile, I mean extremely agile, very big, dominant tackles. And not only did he do it, he did it at such a level, you know, again, it really, he redefined, if you will, that position. He wasn't the same before him and after him. And to that end, he's a guy in the new world NFL where the offensive line is becoming a very in vogue place to be. Big money is coming into the offensive lines. So I think it's unfortunate for Nick Lowry, but I don't think it's going to be unfortunate for Willie Rove.
So in terms of, I gave you my six. What is going to be your six? What are your five, if you will?
I mean, like I said, it can be anywhere. I saw you. You and I were exactly the same. You know, Charles Haley. I hate to say he may miss out because I feel like again he was another one of these guys who Haley again was in the early, you know, his career mid '80s, and he changed that defensive lineman position. He was the next breed, if you will, of Lawrence Taylor.
Right.
But again, you know, he's got the class that he has to compete with, the Reggie White, you know, was he that memorable? To me, you could get the debate there. But
well,
he
here's
wasn't
the case for Kim.
Go ahead.
Here's the case for Charles Haley. Over 100 sacks, 100 and a half sacks in his career. Big-time player on championship teams. And guess what? The only player in NFL history with five Super Bowl rings. He's played on five different Super Bowl teams, this Charles Haley. So he was big wherever he played. He was a guy. And then this is a great Hall of Fame class. I mean, this is a great class. You got a lot of great players who have played the game here. A lot of great players who have played the game. I mean, you can make arguments for a lot of guys, a lot of different guys. To me, Chris Carter should have been the first ballot Hall of Famer. That's just my opinion when it comes to Chris Carter. I mean, 8 consecutive 1,000-yard seasons. I mean, and the funny, I saw this. He did that with 8 different quarterbacks during those 8 years. Not 8 different quarterbacks, I'm sorry. He did it with 6 different quarterbacks. So 8,000-yard seasons with 6 different quarterbacks during his time with the Vikings. And the guy, his numbers are ridiculous. His numbers are ridiculous. They're off the charts. 12,383 receiving yards. I mean, the numbers speak for themselves in a lot of ways. I mean, yes, the Buddy Ryan said all he did was catch touchdowns. He caught touchdowns, but he sure caught them for a lot of yards. 130 touchdowns receiving for Chris Carter. I mean, the numbers speak for themselves. And in my mind, Chris Carter, in my opinion, should have been a first ballot Hall of Famer. This is the third time he will be on the ballot. And I think he will break through this time around. He has to break through this time around, in my opinion. But I think Carter definitely gets in. Deion Sanders, another guy, a lock. I mean, arguably one of the greatest cover corners of all time. He can beat you three different ways, I mean, on punt returns. And he also spends a little time on the offensive side of the ball when he's with the Cowboys and everything. So this guy is a guy who arguably, again, greatest cover corner of all time in Deion Sanders. So it goes without saying that Deion Sanders will be a Hall of Famer. And then you got another guy in Marshall Faulk, who was a part of the greatest show on turf with the St. Louis Rams. I mean, this guy has done it all in his career. Did it all. He did it all in his career. I mean, 757 receptions for 6,000 yards and 36 touchdowns. That's receiving. And we're not even talking about his rushing yards. What is over 12,000 yards, another 100 touchdowns on the ground. And again, Marshall Faulk, there's no doubt about it. First ballot, Hall of Famer in my mind, a guy who belongs in the Hall this time around. And I don't think there's an argument there with Sanders or Faulk. Any arguments there?
Oh, no. I mean, Deion, forget it. I mean, he deserved, and he, you know, he'll be in without question. I told you my thoughts on Chris Carter. Ultimately, I always – it gets back to – and I think Nick Lowry brought up a very – it's a very well-placed argument in how political this can become because – when you look at, if you look at how you look at the NFL in terms of positional players, Paul, he had a great career, but he's going up against some stout competition.
You talk to Chris Carter?
Yeah.
He is, but the numbers, again, speak for themselves. I mean, the 13,000 yards receiving, 13,000 yards, darn near 14,000 yards, 13,899, another 130 touchdowns. All he did was catch touchdowns, yes, but all he did also was 13,899 yards receiving. He did that as well. And also, you're hearing some arguments for Curtis Martin as well. And when Curtis Martin is actually the fourth leading rusher of all time. And he did it ever so quietly. 14,000 yards. 14,101 yards. 90 rushing touchdowns for Curtis Martin. And you think about his career, and you're saying to yourself, when you see all-time rusher, the fourth guy. He's behind Emmitt, he's behind Peyton, and he's behind Barry Sanders. So he's number four on the rushing list, on the all-time rushing list. Number four. That kind of says, wow. That's shocking because he did it ever so quietly. Ever so quietly. Curtis Martin?
Well, Paul, that's why I told you. You know, I listen. You and I sometimes have to be real, and we need to start disclosing maybe a little bit more that you and I are very much Philly guys, and because Chris Carter emanated from Philadelphia, to me it would be very hard to not see or say that after 3 years of waiting, he deserves to be in. But that's why I say, Paul, this is a the NFL is fickle in that regard. It's a league where, to me, at the top of each mountain, there is so much talent that if you don't get in, you know, in that first year, it rarely gets easier for you. But by that same token, I mean, yeah, Curtis Martin, people do forget. You know, that where he stands statistically. But again, then you look at a guy like Chris Carter and you see, But look, where you know his stats don't put him far off from the great ones either. But I think, and that's why I say, Curtis Martin to me though, the only knock Sean Curtis Martin is, A, he never had big rings, and B, Curtis Martin was a lunch pail kind of guy. Although aesthetically, he didn't maybe look like a lunch pail guy. His you know, the way he played football, and unfortunately, the organizations he played for didn't have the notoriety, for example, of a Marshall Faulk, who very early in his career played for a losing franchise. Then he unfortunately went to. Go ahead.
You look at Curtis Martin, I mean, 10 straight season of over 1,000 yards. And if you look at some of the carries, I mean, you're seeing, I mean, first years as a rookie, 1,400 yards, 1,487. 2004, I mean, 2001, he comes back with a 15-13. Then 2004, 1,600 yards, 1,697. And he ends his career with averaging 4 yards a carry. I mean, but the numbers are there for Curtis Martin. The numbers are there for him. But I guess his quiet nature, and it sneaks up on you that, man, Curtis Martin, number four all-time, the fourth all-time leading rusher in NFL history, that sneaks up on you. That sneaks up on you a little bit. That sticks up on you a lot. But I don't think it's enough to get him through. I don't think it's enough. And I added Ed Sable. I mean, Ed Sable, the founder of NFL Films. That, to me, is enough said. I mean, NFL Films is one of the reasons that the NFL is one of the more popular sports right now. I mean, NFL Films is I mean, you watch it, you watch the film, the beauty of the film that you see, John Facenda's of the world, his golden voice over the film. I mean, it revolutionized the industry in a lot of ways, and it helped the NFL to become what the NFL is today. So, in my mind, Ed Sable is a Hall of Famer. The NFL is not the NFL without Ed Sable. And I mean, it kind of, his contribution speaks for itself. So, in my mind, Ed Sable is a Hall of Famer. He is a Hall of Famer. And you can't deny what Ed Sable has meant to the game of football. Ed Sable, in or out?
Well, I mean, Paul, I'm a businessman. And so I look at it and say, to me, the NFL, like you were just saying, they owe him. If they don't put him in, then it's a shame, because the NFL Network, which they so profoundly created and now are profiting from, basically, they need to thank him, right or wrong.
Well, yeah, I mean, NFL Films, the beauty of the film and the lovely voiceovers, John Facenda, the Harry Callises of the world.
The concept of the NFL Network was founded through him. He founded
essentially, I mean,
and that's why I say, to me, there to me is very, very little, very, very little that the NFL, in terms of paying, that you talk about paying homage to a person, place, he is the birthplace of the NFL Network, and
he created NFL Films. I mean, enough said. He created NFL Films. Without that creation, the NFL may not be what it is today. I mean, he created NFL Films. And you watch the film, NFL Films, and you watch their film. I mean, it's beautiful. It's beautiful film. It's a pleasure to watch. And so he has to be a Hall of Famer. Again, a minimum of 4 have to be in, maximum of 7. So only 5 modern-day players can go in at one time. So with that being said, I'll give you my picks one last time before it comes out at 7 o'clock tonight. Chris Carter, Marshall Faulk, Willie Rofe, Deion Sanders, Charles Haley, and the founder of NFL Films, Mr. Ed Sable. That's who I believe will be the 2011 class of the Hall of Fame. And I think it should be interesting to see, to watch tonight, to see what happens. See what happens. I actually was on a look at Tim Brown's Facebook page, and Tim Brown is saying that he'll know by 3 o'clock, and he plans on announcing it at 3 o'clock. So check out Tim Brown's Facebook page if you want to know. If you don't want to wait till 7 o'clock tonight. That's if you don't want to wait. I mean, but it should be very interesting. A lot of excitement here. And like I said, the two locks are obviously Deion Sanders and Marshall Faulk. Other than that, it's open game. It's open game, other than those two. It's really open game. And, again, it's a great class. It's a great Hall of Fame class. A lot of talent here. A lot of talent here in this Hall of Fame. But it should be interesting how this thing plays out. I mean, you got guys like Richard Dent who may not see the Hall. Cortez Kennedy, I don't think is a Hall of Famer. Andre Reed, questionable. Shannon Sharp, I believe, is a Hall of Famer, but I don't think now he'll get in. Not this time around, but I think he is a Hall of Famer. Tim Brown, numbers-wise, I think Tim Brown is a Hall of Famer. Curtis Martin, numbers-wise, is a Hall of Famer. Jerome Bettis, numbers-wise, is a Hall of Famer. Damani Dawson, a very good center for many years. Hall of Famer, close, not sure. So we'll see what happens. We'll see what happens here tonight at 7 o'clock. And, you know, so it should be very interesting. Who will be the 2011? Who will be a part of the 2011 class of the Hall of Fame? I mean, it's a great honor for anybody to be known as one of the best who's ever done it. So it's going to be an honor for whoever gets picked this time around. I mean, and obviously, because of Willie Rofe, what he's meant to this show, and many times he's come on this show. I mean, there's obviously a rooting interest for Willie Rofe here. And so maybe I should have put my bias on the table earlier, but there is a bias here. And, you know, I think that Willie Rofe is a Hall of Famer. First ballot, that's going to be questionable. I'll leave that up to the Hall of Fame voters and all the politics involved with that.
No, I mean, it's also, and I think Willie is smart enough to see too, just to get that nod tells you a little something about, you know, what kind of a player you're dealing with there. It's not, that doesn't happen for everybody. So, I think when you look at just where he got to, it should be noted. And it shouldn't be taken as not just lightly. I don't think Willie took it lightly at all. I think it was very interesting too to hear he said that he's very thankful that he saw that.
And make sure you check out Jason Whitlock's article at FoxSports.com for the argument for Willie Roaf. And maybe that'll change how you feel about Willie and his possible entrance into the Hall of Fame. So make sure you check it out. And, I 11-time Pro Bowler, Willie Roaf. I mean, the guy is one of the best who's done it. He's one of the best who have done it in this game. He's one of the best in terms of offensive tackles. So it should be interesting to see what happens here. Should be interesting to see how this thing plays out. But, again, I gave you my six. Let's see if I'm right. Let's see if I'm right. And,
We definitely want to get some Super Bowl picks, though, right, son?
Oh, yeah, definitely. I was going to get to that. I'm glad you beat me to it. Let's definitely lay this on the line and let's lay it down. You want to go first or you want me to go?
Well, of course, you know, you're always afraid to go first. We're afraid of the dark. I might as well be afraid of making some picks. But let's keep this real. You look at what you talk about with New England versus the Jets, and then you talk about the Jets and Pittsburgh, and now you look at Green Bay. No one talks about Green Bay until today except your prognostication way back in August. But I think you have to recognize that they were in the preseason predominantly, you know, a lot of people looked at the Packers saying this is their year. Same with the Steelers, but and we talked about it today. It's either Aaron Rodgers or Ben Roethlisberger. I'm going to tell you, Paul, I see the way Green Bay plays. And I don't see that offense slowing down. And because of it, you look at the hot offense always, and I don't think the Steelers' defense was that ironclad throughout these playoffs. I don't think they're shutting them down. And you're not. It's not a Mark Sanchez type quarterback. To me,
or even Joe Flacco.
Exactly. So I look at Green Bay and I say kudos to Paul for putting him in there. And so I'm gonna look at Green Bay Packers.
Okay. And looking at the Super Bowl, I've been thinking about it. I've been staying up and late at night, tossing and turning, trying to figure out who will win this Super Bowl. And I say to myself, you go through Philadelphia, you go through Atlanta, you go through Chicago, and you find a way, you have a Pro Bowl kicker in David Akers who misses two gimme field goals in that particular football game against the Eagles. In the championship game, the starting quarterback for the Chicago Bears, Jay Cutler, ineffective, injured, taking out the football game, didn't play. And I say to myself, Aaron Rodgers is playing great football right now. I'm saying to myself, and I said it at the beginning, I can't fight destiny. I'm not going to try to fight destiny. Big Ben's clutch, 10-2 in the playoffs. I know all the things he's done, 2-time Super Bowl winner. I know everything they've done. But guess what? I can't argue with destiny. I can't fight destiny. And so with that being said, I think the Green Bay Packers are like Kelly. I think they're like Michelle. And I think they're like Beyonce. They are destiny's child. And destiny is on their side. And the Green Bay Packers will win Super Bowl 45. 21-17, the Green Bay Packers beat the Pittsburgh Steelers. And real quickly, Willie Roaf, vote Willie Roaf in to the Hall of Fame, everybody, Hall of Fame voters. Make it happen. Make it happen. Let a time Pro Bowler. Only two offensive linemen have done it. Jonathan Ogden and Anthony Munoz. And guess what? Anthony Munoz is a Hall of Famer. 1990s all-decade player Willie Roaf and 2000 all-decade player, second team with the Kansas City Chiefs. So The body of work is there. And also, real quickly, Jeremy, your brother Jeff, his wife is in labor, and so he may be having a baby too. And real quickly, we want to thank Devin Alexander for stopping by. And again, you can listen to this show and other shows at blogtalkradio.com/PCAN. You can listen to this show and all other shows. Jeremy, anything to add real quickly?
You know, Jackson Adler Yesby, the third boy in a great trilogy of grandsons for the great Miss Yesby. And go Pack. And next year, J-E-T-S, Jets, baby.
Thank you for listening. I want to thank Devin Alexander again. And make sure you listen to this show and all other shows at blogtalkradio.com. For Jeremy Yesby, this is Paul Gann. See you later. Bye.